This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iraqi Prime Minister, who is set to visit Washington, says his country no longer needs U.S. combat troops to fight the Daesh. Afghan government forces push back Taliban militants from strategic positions in more than a dozen provinces. Police in France and Greece clash with protesters angry over coronavirus policies. Similar events are held in several other countries. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Good to have you with us. The Iraqi Prime Minister says that his country no longer needs American combat troops, and a formal time frame for the withdrawal would depend on the outcome of his talks with U.S. officials. In an interview, Mustafa Al-Kadhimi said that American withdrawal schedule would be based on the needs of Iraqi forces. Al-Kadhimi, who is set to meet with U.S. President Joe Biden in Washington Monday, underlined that the Iraqi army is capable of conducting its own independent operations against Daesh terrorists. However, the premier said that Iraq will ask for the U.S. help for training and military intelligence gathering in its fight against terrorism. The U.S. agreed in April to remove over 2,500 combat troops out of Iraq, but no timetable was announced. In January 2020, Iraqi parliament issued a resolution demanding the government to expel American forces from the country. Political analyst Mohsen Saleh, to whom I talked to an hour ago, says that he doesn't believe the American forces will leave Iraq peacefully.
The Americans should have withdrawn long ago. But with this government, with the Kadhimi government, and with the statements by the Foreign Minister Fuad Hussein, I don't think there is a decision in this government to ask the Americans to withdraw. And occupiers never leave peacefully. They should understand that. And the Hashd al-Sha'bi popular unit, I guess, they were able to succeed in putting an end to the movement of the American troops in Iraq, especially in the around Baghdad and in the southern part and many parts in the middle of Iraq. That's why I guess Kadhimi should have the license of the Iraqi people and the Iraqi movements and the Iraqi political factions in Iraq.
The Turkish Defense Ministry says two of its soldiers have been killed and two others wounded in an attack on their armored vehicle in northern Syria. Turkish forces immediately launched retaliatory fire against what are called terrorist positions. The attack happened in a region where Turkey launched a cross-border operation in 2016 to drive away Daesh terrorists and Syria's Kurdish YPG forces. According to media reports, the Turkish soldiers came under attack in the Bab al-Bab area of Aleppo province. Turkey has significant military presence in northwestern Syria. Ankara regards Kurdish YPG as a terrorist group linked to the Kurdistan Workers' Party militants who have been fighting against Turkey for decades. Afghan government troops have pushed back Taliban militants from strategic positions in more than a dozen provinces. Military officials say that scores of militants have also been killed in clashes with government forces. An hour ago, Amin Alami provided us with some details regarding the army operations in different parts of Afghanistan.
According to a statement released by Afghanistan's Defense Ministry, at least 175 Taliban militants were killed and at least 81 others were wounded as a result of counterattack operations conducted by Afghan ground and aerial forces, mainly in northern Tahar province as well as in southern Helmand. These attacks were launched across 14 out of 34 provinces of Afghanistan, according to this statement released by Afghanistan's Defense Ministry. In the meantime, the Afghan security forces say that Afghan troops could successfully take the control of Ispin Buldak, that is a border point between Afghanistan and Pakistan in southern Afghanistan. And now, according to officials here in Kabul, Ispin Buldak port is under the control of the Afghan government. Despite the Afghan government says that Islam Kala custom, that is also another key border point that connects Afghanistan with Iran, is also under the control of the Afghan government. But the Taliban militants say that we are controlling this area as well.
Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian teenager in the occupied West Bank. We've discussed the regime's violence against Palestinians with our guest in our news review program. Let's take a look at it.
And now, Palestinians have held a funeral for a 17-year-old boy killed during an Israeli raid on a village in the occupied West Bank. Mourners carried the body of Mohammed Muni al-Tamimi through the streets to the burial grounds. The teenage boy succumbed to his wounds at a hospital a day after being shot by Israeli forces. He was shot during protests against illegal settlements in the town of Beita near Nablus. On Friday, hundreds of Palestinians gathered in Beita to demonstrate against Israeli aggression and forceful confiscation of their lands. Regime forces fired tear gas and rubber bullets, injuring over 300 ralliers. Palestinians have vowed to continue the protests until they take back their land. Joining us now for the program is Mona Kandil from Ramallah and Paul Larudi from the Free Palestine Movement, joining us from Berkeley, California. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Hope you're safe both and doing well. Mona, we're going to start with you to get the latest, if you could, please.
Well, on Friday, several protests and demonstrations took place across the occupied West Bank in the village of Beita, northern the occupied West Bank in Nablus. Hundreds of Palestinians took part in a protest against the building of an illegal settlement known as Aviatar. It was built on the lands confiscated from Mount Sabih. Palestinians were demanding that the settlement should be removed because settlers left the settlement. However, Israeli occupation forces were protecting the settlement and saying that they will allow the Israeli settlers to return back. We are speaking about over 320 Palestinians were wounded in this protest in Beita. In another place, in the village of Nabi Saleh, northern the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah, another protest was held against the Israeli expansion of the Israeli settlements there, when a Palestinian teenager, Mohammed Munir Al-Tamimi, 17-year-old, was shot in the back, according to his relatives, and he succumbed to his injuries. Today, hundreds of Palestinians took part in the funeral processions that was held for Mohammed Al-Tamimi in his hometown village of Deir Nizam, northwest occupied Ramallah. Palestinians chanted anti-Israel slogans and chanted slogans against the Israeli crimes and aggression being carried out against the Palestinians, the peacefully demonstrating people against the settlements in the occupied West Bank.
Paul, welcome to the program. Your initial thoughts on this, Paul, and it's crazy, while Palestinians are fighting tooth and limb to try to get back land they've had stolen from them over the past 70-some-odd years, they're still having land taken away from them on a daily basis. Even today, it boggles the mind. Your thoughts?
Well, this has been the plan for Palestine for the last 100 years or so, to go by increments, to conduct ethnic cleansing and genocide by increments, to slowly increase the suffering and to expel by meters and even centimeters, to slowly colonize more and more of the land and to confiscate the land from the people who have owned it for almost 2,000 years. And so this is simply part of the continuing effort to do that. And the Israelis are becoming gradually more and more violent and brutal in their occupation because they're reaching, because they can, basically, because the reports in the Western media, if they vary very little from day to day, no matter how brutal, if they slowly become more brutal, then a lot of the Western audience doesn't even listen to it. It's not even broadcast on the media. People don't know it's happening.
Hmm. And Mona, June 13th, we saw, after it seemed like a forever term for Benjamin Netanyahu, we finally saw him leave. We saw Naftali Bennett come in as new prime minister. Has anything changed on the ground with dialogue between Israelis and Palestinians, or the treatment of the Palestinians by the Israelis?
Palestinians, from the first moment and the news about changing Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu with a new Israeli Prime Minister, Palestinians said they don't expect any change in the policy of the Israeli administration, of the Israeli regime. However, they expect that the new Israeli cabinet would be even worse than Netanyahu's one, because it's well known that Bennett and Gantz, they both fully support Israeli settlements, and they declared several times in the past that they will not accept for a settlement activity to stop here in the occupied West Bank. And that's why Palestinians don't expect that there would be any kind of negotiation or talks with this Israeli regime, because Netanyahu's policy was a little bit well known. He was supporting settlements, but because of the American, let's say, position sometimes during the Obama's, let's say, term on office, they had to stop expansion of settlements for a while. They returned back. To settlement construction during the Trump's era, but they were not publicly speaking about the thousands of new settler units. However, the new Israeli regime is saying clearly that settlement expansion would continue, settlement activity would continue, and they will not listen to any demands, whether from any part of the world, from the international community or the European Union, because this Israeli regime knows very well that they need the support of the Israeli settler community, and they have to please them. Otherwise, they could regime could fail, and the Israelis would have again to go for another election.
Thank you both for joining us on the program. Stay safe, both of you. Mona Candiel from Ramallah and Mr. Paul Arudi joining us from Berkeley, California. And that's a wrap for the segment of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Police have clashed with anti-lockdown protesters in the Greek and French capitals as anger is boiling in several European countries and Australia over restrictions to stem the spread of the coronavirus. The riot police in Athens fired tear gas and water cannon to disperse the protesters. This is the second rally in a week in Greece against the COVID vaccination drive. Similar rallies were held in other parts of the world. In France, clashes erupted between police and protesters, angry over new restrictions in place amid a steep rise in infections. Hundreds of ralliers also demonstrated in Italian capital Rome against a compulsory vaccine pass program. In Australia's Sydney, people again hit the streets to denounce a month-long lockdown. The demonstration was held a day after officials said restrictions could remain in place until October. A similar event was held in Melbourne. From Montreal, let's bring in Angelo Giuliano as a political analyst. Good to have you with us, Angelo. So this is the second time in a week in Greece. People seem to be even more angry than elsewhere in the world, maybe. What's the reason for this?
I think it's a general dissatisfaction about the system, about government.
I think it's now it's we saw it also in France, the yellow jacket movement. It's what we call in French ras-le-bol. People are just fed up. It's an accumulation of people being against the system, against fake democracy, democracies that are for the 1%, by the 1%, for the 1%, and also the dictatorship of the EU, and also the pharmaceutical lobbies. So it's a general dissatisfaction, and also it's the economies are not doing well. So people need they're angry and they need to go to the streets.
Angelo, it's a matter of life and death. You know how things are, and we have this new surge again. But there are a certain percentage of population that's different from place to place in Europe that are unwilling totally to get vaccinated.
I think it's part of the mistrust in general when it comes to media and government. When people are just aware that there's lots of fake news, they enter into the conspiracy theories, and there's a general distrust of media and government. So it's part of this, and so of course there's it's a matter of life and death. But the problem is that it's also a problem of culture. You see in Asia how it was dealt. The COVID was dealt as united front against this virus. While in the West, we have more individualistic society where people are focusing on themselves and not on fighting together the virus. I think this is one of the main problems. It's people being individualistic and not looking at the whole picture.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Angela Giuliano, political analyst in Montreal. British lawmakers say that taxpayers will bear the cost of COVID for decades to come. In two new reports, Public Accounts Committee underlined that the government's response to the crisis has exposed UK's taxpayers to significant financial risks. They also said an inquiry will not come soon enough to learn lessons from the pandemic. In the cross-party reports, legislators further attacked the government's spending on unusable protective kit. They also put the estimated cost of the government's measures at £372 billion. The UK government's debt is now over £2.2 trillion, or something around 99.7% of GDP, a rate not seen since the early 1960s. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
listeners, especially.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. And welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, July 25th, 2021. I'm Atefa Erfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is a Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages from around the world. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Dear listeners, if you have any messages for our listeners around the world, then record your voice and send it to us and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special, the Sunday program is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back to your program. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. Yes, reception reports are very useful and important to us in IRAB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports enable us to provide a better service to you, dear listeners, around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. Now, here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception report, including Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, Omar Kubik from Sweden, and Shivando Paul from India. All of them are old and regular listeners. So, Mizanur Rahman, Omar Kubik, Shivando Paul, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Many thanks for sending us these reception reports. And here I send my appreciations and warmest greetings to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us letters and emails from around the world, including Wu Xianun from China, Hector Friahofre from Chile, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. Sudhir Pandey, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. Henry L. Omadhe from the Philippines, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. And the last but not the least is an email from Omar Kovic from Sweden, one of our old and regular listeners. So, please stay with us until the end of the program. I will be back with all these kind messages after the music. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here we have a lot of letters and emails from around the world, which I have chosen some of them to read in this edition. And of course, we have other emails and letters for other editions of Listeners Special, but this time an email from Wu Xianun from China. Wu says, "I am a radio listener in Shenzhen, China. I hope you can issue me a radio listening certificate card, that is QSL card, to prove my listening. I hope your station provides the listeners with EQSL card, schedule, flag, etc. First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Wu Xianun from China, and many thanks for sending us this message, this email from Shenzhen, China. We are so happy that our signals are received in your area, Shenzhen, in your country, in China. Of course, we sent all our dear listeners around the world a radio listening certificate card, that is a QSL card. And these times, because of coronavirus pandemic, we send our dear listeners an EQSL card. Yes, wait for one of them, Wu Xianun from China. We will send you an EQSL card, and regarding your request for sending you schedule, You can find our frequency schedule and our program schedule in our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Of course, about our souvenirs, our promotional items in IRB English Radio, we will send them as soon as the hygienic protocols regarding coronavirus are removed. Well, many thanks, Wu Shannon from China. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRB English Radio broadcast. And from Chile, from Latin America, we have an email from Hector Fria Jofre. Hector is one of our regular and old listeners who says, "Dear friends, I am pleased to send you a reception signal of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran according to my details. I am very happy with the current moment of the propagation, which allows us to listen to distant radio signals as an example to hear in Chile, a signal sent from Africa and elsewhere. The signal itself is not very strong, which is logical, but with the headphones, it is perfectly audible. I would like to receive information about your country. Best regards." First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Hector Fria Jofre from Chile, from Latin America. We are so happy that the signals of IRB English Radio are heard in Latin America. And Hector, so you're pleased and you're happy with the propagation, which allows you to listen to distant radio signals. And you said the signal itself is not very strong, but fortunately, it is perfectly audible with headphones. Thank God. So Hector Fria Jofre from Chile, if you want to know about Iran, if you want to receive information about our country, about Iran, of course, we broadcast many different programs about Islamic Republic of Iran, and these days we are broadcasting programs like Close Up Iran, which is broadcast on Mondays, and about the time of the broadcast of this program, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/en, and there, in addition to finding the archives of different programs about Iran, like Iranian Notable Sources of Global Honor, Close Up Iran, Iranian Markets, we have the archives of these programs. Also, in our website, you can find the time of the broadcast of the programs that are airing nowadays in IRB English Radio. So, Hector Fria Jofre from Chile, many thanks for writing this email to us. Wait for one of our EQSL cards. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Hector. Now, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other kind emails and letters from around the world. Please stay with us. Welcome back from India. We have an email from Sudhir Pandey. Sudhir Pandey is one of our regular listeners who says, "Thank you for your mail and the courtesy you have shown, and I hope that my verification will be rectified by QSL cards. I will do my best to send my comments about your various programs, as I am old student of Beauvoir, Le Mans, France, in 1997 to 98. Hope to stay in connection. Regards and salam and warmest greetings to you, Sudhir Pandey from India, one of our regular listeners, and thank you very much for sending us this message, this email. Of course, my colleagues will send you an EQSL card. Yes, we are in the time of pandemic, and we have designed and prepared EQSL cards from in our radio for our dear listeners around the world. Yes, wait for one of them. And so you do your best to send us comments about our programs because you're a student of Board Loman's friends. Thank you very much. So in your upcoming emails and letters, please tell us your views about IRB English Radio broadcasts and programs. Many thanks for sending us this email. So dear Pandy from India, we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And from the Philippines, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, and that is Henry L. Omate. Henry says, dear friends at IRB English Radio, greetings from the city of Smile, Bacolod City here in central Philippines. I am one of your listeners from this part of the world. Can you please send me your new shortwave frequency schedule so that I can find and listen to your, of course, find and listen to your station easier? Kind regards. Hello, salam and warmest greetings to you, Henry L. Omate from the Philippines, one of our regular listeners. Yes, you are one of our old listeners from the city of Smile, as you said, Bacolod City in central Philippines. And thank you very much for sending us this email. You're looking for our shortwave frequency schedule, so you can find it in our website at www.parsetoday.com/en and wait for one of our EQSL cards in your region. Many thanks for writing this email. Henry L. Omate from the Philippines, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. So, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Sweden. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This email, as I said, is from Sweden, from Olmarkovic, one of our regular listeners, who says, dear radio friends in Tehran, greetings from Sweden. I mean, Olmarkovic means dear the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. A new report sent on my reception of a regional IRIB transmitter heard by me. Kindly check my details and send me by email or ordinary mail a confirmation with frequency and date of listening for my records. Kind regards from Sweden with the hope of continued collaboration between Iran and Sweden for our mutual friendship. Yours sincerely, Olmarkovic. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Olmarkovic from Sweden. And please accept our warmest appreciation for sending us this email. So you are waiting for an EQSL card. Yes, my colleagues will send you an EQSL card. You have sent us details and email. Of course, my colleagues will check them out and send you an EQSL card. And also, we wish you all the best. We hope that this collaboration between IRIB English Radio and you, our regular listener, will continue. Many thanks for writing this email to us, Olmarkovic from Sweden. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. And now, dear listeners, I think here we have to skip to the next section of this week's program, which, of course, is this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Hope you like it.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think your news coverage is useful because you cover news that other international broadcasters often don't, such as the BBC or the Voice of America. You cover information that's especially about your region and the Middle East, which is very useful. I don't think there's much in the way of improvement as I can particularly think of. You're putting in a good signal. What I would say is that it's good that you've remained on shortwave. Now, a lot of international broadcasters have abandoned shortwave for the internet, and thereby losing, I would think, a lot of their listeners. And international broadcasting is very important because it helps nations to cooperate and helps people from different countries to be friendly, etc. I'm one of those old-fashioned people that doesn't use the internet, surprisingly. I often get told off by my friends because I'm not on the internet, but no, it's far more exciting. Now, I mean, you have to agree that the quality of reception, obviously, on the internet is better than shortwave, but shortwave is very exciting. You're actually receiving a signal that's come from hundreds or thousands of miles away and has been sent by a transmitting antenna and bounced off the ionosphere. And although the signal may fade a bit and you might get a bit of noise, it's far more exciting and interesting to listen on shortwave than on the internet. Well, my message is keep listening to IRRD on shortwave. Keep listening, keep in contact with the stations, keep sending them reception reports because they are valuable to the technical staff of these stations, and that they'd like to know that their signal is getting through, and they like listener response because they want to know there are people who are actually out there listening. Thanks very much.
And wishing you all the best in life, here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, the Sunday program, your program, dear listeners. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Well, the end to any privacy is the way Pegasus and Israeli spyware could be described. The malware for mobile phones has been spying on anyone from regular citizens to heads of states and journalists. The audio and video of one's phone can be turned on without the owner knowing it. And everything can be accessed, from old messages to notes on your phone contacts. Nothing is safe. How dangerous is this, and what can be done to stop it? we will be taking a look at all of this under Spotlight.
More victims of a malicious Pegasus software hacking scandal have been revealed, as phone numbers of several prominent British Muslim activists have appeared in a leaked list of successful hacks by the Israeli-made spyware. The list includes Raghad al-Tikriti of the Muslim Association of Britain, Mohammed Kosbar of Finsbury Park Mosque, Baroness Paula O'Dean, and Anas al-Tikriti of the Cordoba Foundation. Mr. al-Tikriti suspects he was hacked by agents from the Emirates over his past criticism of the regime.
I've had a long-standing struggle with the UAE, and simply because over 10 years ago, I highlighted the fact that the UAE had persecuted and followed on by a prosecution of dozens of reformists, of people who called for democracy, who called for accountability, who called for transparency in their own country. It's a scandal. It's a complete scandal, just like all the scandals that engulf us, unfortunately, on every single level. Infringing on someone's entire life. I mean, this Pegasus software, apparently, I'm no technician, but I understand that I'm being told by experts that it basically takes control of your mobile phone, which essentially is, and this is something that humanity needs to contend with, is our entire lives.
At least 400 British citizens have been targeted by foreign regimes using Pegasus, yet Number 10 has remained stunningly silent on the matter.
How on earth could Great Britain, no less, be blasé regarding 400 of its citizens being attacked in such a callous, obscene, despicable manner by a regime that is non-democratic, absolutely, it's anti-democratic, authoritarian, rogue, corrupt regime such as the United Arab Emirates.
The UAE have failed to respond to the accusations, but they are ultimately just one of up to 40 regimes currently using the Pegasus service. The real question for British victims is, did local intelligence services know about the hacking? And if not, how could this failure have possibly been allowed to occur? Robert Carter, London.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, author and researcher Daniel Genja out of Barcelona, and journalist and commentator Ramiro Funes out of Los Angeles. Thank you both for being with us. Well, I'm going to start this off in Barcelona. And Daniel, we have heard for years that smartphones can listen in and even see its owners without them knowing. Tell me what is different about this Pegasus spyware and what makes it so much more dangerous.
The Pegasus spyware is able to be installed on the phone without the owner doing anything. It can be installed remotely without the owner having any idea that it actually is on their phone. It can access their messages, can access their camera, their microphone, and is basically able to have full control over all the content on their phone, which makes it very dangerous. Now, the issue with Pegasus had also been raised previously. This is it is not new that what we know about the software. What is new now is, of course, the extent of how many people individually in higher positions have been targeted, which of course creates a completely new reality of a very global surveillance that is being. The record has its source in a Zionist entity where it has been, where this software has been developed with the backing of the Zionist regime directly.
Let me go over to Ramiro. Daniel just said something about the Zionist entity, and I want to pick up on that as far as this being an Israeli company and the danger of that in general, because we know that it is a regime that does not abide by any type of international law at all. Ramiro, your take on that side of it.
That's exactly right. I think the Pegasus software is extremely dangerous. It is part and parcel of the Zionist method of control using intelligence abroad. The founders of the quote-unquote State of Israel understood the importance of controlling key aspects of infrastructure and trade, controlling the key trade routes of society, hence why occupied Palestine or the State of Israel is where it is today, because it sits at the key intersections of infrastructure in the Middle East. Now, applying that same logic to the 21st century, what are the key infrastructure points? The internet, WhatsApp, Google, Facebook. These are the points of infrastructure that are used all over the world daily by every single person. I don't know a single person who doesn't have a smartphone, who doesn't have these apps. And so now we can consider these applications, these devices, as key infrastructure. And yet, once again, the Zionists have taken control of this key infrastructure, control the information that flows in and out, and see and monitor anybody who is in any way speaking out against their client governments. In Latin America, for example, one of the more lesser reported stories is that the Israeli government has been selling Pegasus, the Zionists have been selling Pegasus to the governments of Mexico, Honduras, and Colombia, three of which are key drug trading countries that are involved in the drug trade in the United States. And this software has been used to monitor, track, and assassinate activists, journalists who have spoken out against the crimes of the Mexican government, the Honduran government, the Colombian government, in collaboration with Mossad, with the IDF, with Israeli intelligence. So this is something that affects the entire world, and it affects key infrastructure because everyone uses smartphone technology. And I think it's, again, part and parcel of the Zionist strategy of controlling the key points of infrastructure to make sure that nobody speaks out against their allies.
Daniel, your take on what Ramir just said about as far as being selling this to certain governments. I want to look at the way that this malware can be used to control dissent, control whether we're talking about journalists, activists, and even sometimes heads of states. As we talked about earlier, that with this spyware, everything is accessible, which of course means very private information that could lead to blackmail.
It's dangerous in so many ways, especially because it is not only a tool that was developed by the Zionists, was developed by people who have ties to the Zionist regime and was approved by it. It was also promoted by the Zionist regime to be sold to different regimes, but also it is being sold, it is disseminated and used in different ways. And even in, if I remember correctly, in 2018, there was an article in the Zionist newspaper that there was an investigative report on how many countries and how many regimes have been using this particular software to spy, but not only to spy on journalists, human rights activists, lawyers, academics, but also to coerce and threaten and blackmail people or to persecute minorities. So this can effectively, of course, lead to an increase of state violence and can have drastic implications for individuals and for population groups, which is what makes it dangerous on so many levels. But of course, it is part and parcel of the Zionist strategy, because as much of other technologies and mechanisms that the Zionist regime is selling globally, it has consolidated itself globally as a force for the creation of methods of population containment and control that had been practiced and tested on Palestinians for at least the last 73 years. So much of the surveillance is tested in Palestine, and in many ways, Pegasus is just one of the examples of the transnationalization of the violence against Palestinians, where Israel is using Palestinians and developing all sorts of methods that will help oppress people elsewhere and coerce people in key positions to coerce them into making decisions, which gives, again, the Zionist regime even much more power, potentially.
I mean, Romero, I mean, would you say that this cyber surveillance is a new weapon? Obviously, that is quite dangerous. And what needs to be done in order to control it, just as we have other weapons that there are various laws with it? What do you think about that? What can be done?
Cyber surveillance is definitely a weapon, not only because it serves to monitor your actions, to make sure that you stay in line, to make sure that you don't criticize Israel, to make sure that you don't criticize the U.S., the Western countries, but it also serves as a weapon, a mass weapon of distraction. Here in the United States, where I'm speaking to you now from, every day there are new applications, methods, devices, content designed to distract and miseducate the population, to keep people misinformed, to not care about what's going on around the world. And I think that this cyber surveillance, it plays a role as well when we're talking about predictive behavior and data. Based on the words that you type on your phone, based on the words that you say in conversations with people, the big tech companies, which are 100% in collaboration with the Zionist Entity of Israel, they use that data to predict your behavior and also to influence your behavior, to make it seem as if you want something that you really don't, to put content in your face and to want a desired outcome. And this is also used in the political sphere as well, where we see social media surveillance being used to promote regime change efforts in Cuba, to promote regime change efforts in the Middle East and all over the world. And so I think that cyber surveillance and spying and hacking is a huge threat, not only in terms of collecting data and keeping people in a low vibrational state of distraction, but also in terms of making you want something that you really didn't want. And I think in terms of correcting this, I think it really comes down to values. It really comes down to having progressive anti-imperialist governments realign the values of a society. I think Iran is doing a great job at that. I think countries like Nicaragua, Venezuela are doing a great job of that as well, where they're creating their own independent media companies, their own smartphone technology, their own devices that are free from some of the filth that we see in the Western societies, free from the hacking. And so I think it's really up to the anti-imperialist countries like Iran, like Russia, like China, Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, to develop independent technologies and infrastructure so that they can't get to our technologies to begin with, to create things that aren't designed to distract us and keep us in a low state. Okay. And so I think that's it.
Well, what about that, Daniel? He just said about the, which I like, the weapons of mass distraction. And he talked about the anti-imperialist front. But as you know, the anti-imperialist front is continually under pressure, whether we're talking about economic sanctions or we're talking about in the media war, the soft war. And on the other hand, so when you're still using some of their platforms, as we saw with Press TV basically being shut down and taken off of .com, so where do we go with this? On the one hand, the pressure is on economically. On the other hand, if we use their platforms or use their smartphones, now we see the situation with actually the Israeli regime being in control of most of it.
Rather a dilemma, and I agree that there need to be new ways to be found in order for anti-imperialist factions to develop different kinds of, maybe through a collaboration of alternative media. I mean, Press TV has this example you mentioned, when Press TV's domain was bought, Press TV managed very swiftly to use a different domain and still to continue its program without any major interruption, which showed that even those threats or direct forms of intimidation coming from the U.S. regime have been able to, Press TV was able to circumvent them. But of course, the danger is there, and effectively there would need to be different ways to find alternative platforms that can be used. But also, I agree with what the other guest said, it's of course also a question of values, because as long as there is this imperialist structure and as long as the Zionist entity exists, we will be faced with such challenges, because effectively even this cyber spying is just a digitalized form of different forms of spying that the Zionist entity has been employing for so many years, such as the conventional spying, where they would spy and conduct targeted assassinations against people. And these days, these things take place rather in online spaces. But there needs, of course, to be a continuous effort from within the resistance axis and from the resistance to counter these efforts, and of course, to remain aware of them.
Romero, why aren't we seeing more of a stronger reaction from Western governments? Because also some of them have been targeted. We saw that Emmanuel Macron of France, of course, was one of those that was targeted. And I mean, we have seen the reports coming out about Saudi Arabia and UAE these authoritarian countries like this using it to silence dissent. So these countries that at least try to say that they support human rights, some of these Western governments, why aren't we even hearing anything coming out of, for example, Washington or London in condemning this spyware?
I think Washington and London will never condemn any of the crimes of Israel and the Zionist entity, because it falls in line exactly with their foreign policy goals. When we're talking about the victims of these cyber attacks in the Middle East, we have, you know, targeting against Palestinians, against people in Yemen, against people in Afghanistan, Iran, and then in Latin America as well, you know, you have journalists, activists, academics in Mexico, Colombia, Honduras, countries that are neo-colonies of U.S. imperialism. All of that benefits the interests of Wall Street and the London Stock Exchange. And this is the new level and the new frontier of the war in the 21st century. We're no longer in the era of frontline soldiers and infantry combating each other. We're in a communicational war, a digital war of data, where if you have more data and information from your enemy, you can control them more. You can even predict their behavior. The technology with AI and algorithms, it's so advanced that you can manipulate a whole society into believing something that is not true. And so I think the reason why the Western countries will never call out Israel is because they're in fact collaborating with Israel to use this technology against their enemies, against their oppressors, and they're using this as a way to enter the next frontier of imperialism in the 21st century. And it's something that's very scary, and that's why I'm very proud of countries like Iran and Russia and China and others in the anti-imperialist bloc that are developing independent technology, because the second you agree to use their infrastructure, their technology, their apps, you're making yourself vulnerable to their exploitation, to them surveilling you if you speak out against them. And so it's so important for us to develop the next level of defense, a frontier, our own technologies, our own applications. And I think that's what it's going to take.
Daniel, what do you think about as for the possibility of a grassroots global movement in trying to get this type of spyware to be banned or to be deemed illegal? The possibility of that side of things?
As long as governments are continuing to use the spyware, I don't see much probability of that. Of course, now there is an awareness of the spyware, but still, like, even in the Western media, it hasn't been the Israeli role in it hasn't been as highlighted as much as it could have, and it has continued to be used by governments that, as you said, at least pretend that they are interested in human rights. While at the same time, of course, it also serves the Zionist regime to connect with its newfound allies. It has sold the software to the regimes in Saudi and Bahrain and UAE and so on, who don't even pretend that they care about human rights. So effectively, I do not think that that could lead to the software being banned. And even if the Zionist regime has been promoting itself as a technological hub, as a very advanced digitalized entity, so I wouldn't be surprised if they have other software. So if they're already developing other things that they can use to continue spying on, and as long as they have Palestine as a testing ground, as a laboratory where they are abusing Palestinians to develop all sorts of technologies, I do not see that there is a potential end to that coming from even from grassroots, as long as it's in the Western imperialist framework.
Well, what about the Romero? Daniel just talked about the Zionist regime and how it, even with this, even with the spyware, they're using it to try to promote themselves, like they are above the rest. Just from the, we know they use, from a military perspective, they use a lot of propaganda to say that they're the strongest and the most moral. And now in dealing with technology, it's as if they want to say, we are superior, we are above the rest, and sort of an intimidation factor. What can be done about this? And what do you think about resistance media and the role of basically educating people to what's going on? Your take on what needs to be done on that side of things?
I think that's such a great point. One of the talking points of the Zionists is that Israel is a free, is paradise. You can do whatever you want. They boast about engaging in behavior, decadent behavior.